Sam Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. One person has died in a New Mexico wildfire. This is thousands in the town of Ruidoso got the order no one wants to hear as a wildfire races toward a
city. Sheriff drove down the street with the sirens going and his bullhorn saying, you have 5 minutes and don't try to take everything. You need to get out.
New Mexico's governor has declared an emergency. More than 500 structures have been damaged. The heat wave that stretches from Missouri to Maine will last the rest of the week. CBS's Nikki Batiste reports from Syracuse, New York.
In Syracuse, where record temperatures rose to 96 degrees today, public schools let out early because most of their classrooms don't have air conditioners.
They get too hot. They're not going to be able to concentrate and do anything that's productive. So that's what we had to balance.
Some of those kids who got out early headed to the city's first public pool to open. It hit capacity in just 30 minutes.
Meantime, CBS News Philadelphia meteorologist Bill Kelly is tracking a tropical depression that is forming and causing emergency preparations already in Texas.
Potential tropical cyclone one, and this is going to bring a lot of rainfall for you folks in Texas. We're talking about 5 to 15 inches of rain from Houston right down through Brownsville.
Trump-backed candidate Hung Cao is projected to win the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate in Virginia's primary election and would face incumbent Democrat Tim Kaine in November. President Biden is opening the door for spouses of U.S. citizens who entered the U.S. without documentation to remain by getting work visas and a pathway to citizenship. CBS's Lilia Luciano.
The policy comes 2 weeks after the administration severely restricted access to asylum for people crossing the border illegally. Today's announcement could help Biden in key battleground states like Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia, where there are more than 300,000 mixed-status families that would benefit.
Republican states are expected to challenge President Biden's plan. The British military says its bulk carrier, Tudor, sinks after an attack by Yemen's Houthis rebels. One person on board is believed to have died. Russia's president is in North Korea for a summit between the two outcast leaders, CBS's Elizabeth Palmer.
After his plane touched down in Pyongyang, President Vladimir Putin received a warm personal welcome from North Korea's Kim Jong-un. The two leaders are expected to broaden the relationship that blossomed after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. U.S. officials say there's evidence that Russia's been using North Korean weapons in Ukraine, and this summit is likely to see that flow grow in return for Russian oil, food, and technology coming to North Korea.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump tells a rally in Wisconsin Tuesday that he wants to be the law and order president.
I will be the president for law-abiding Americans, every background, every walk of life, every race, religion, color, and creed. I'll be the president.
Trump was convicted of 34 felonies in a recent hush money trial. Trump campaigned in Racine. Wisconsin's Supreme Court will hear a challenge to Governor Evers' 400-year school funding increase. Evers used his line item veto to make changes that give Wisconsin schools a per-pupil funding boost for the next four centuries. Wisconsin governors have sweeping veto powers, but the courts have put limits on striking single words or letters. Justices announced Monday that they will take the case. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers lose in Anaheim. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers losing last night to the Angels 5-3. Milwaukee starting pitcher Carlos Rodriguez giving up those five runs, four earned. Manager Pat Murphy after the loss.
That's his second major league start.
Do you feel like he took a step forward tonight, though, Murph?
And I think he's going to be a good pitcher. There's no question about it. But you got to have fastball command. You got to be able to throw a fastball in the zone when you want to. The leadoff walk to Adele there is, you know, unnecessary. And then what happened after that? It's just got to control it a little better. But, yeah, I think he's going to be very good.
Basketball, the Boston Celtics are the NBA champions. They beat the Dallas Mavericks 106-88. Former Buck Drew Holiday now has his second championship ring.
They really embraced me when I first got here, and they made this game super easy. But the fans here are insane, man. I didn't expect it to be like this. I love you guys.
That's the Celtics' Drew Holiday. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy tonight with lows only in the mid-70s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds tomorrow with a few showers and thunderstorms around. Some could be strong. Highs mid-80s. And still a few storms Thursday, high mid-70s. We're sitting at 84 degrees right now.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, the executive director of Block joins us. Angela Lang will be here in hour number two, public service announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, Kutagi. To all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega, and this portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, again, I'm right once a day, and I really appreciate it, Chujunk.
Of course. Once,
yeah, been a long day for me, working hard, and I'm in, as you know, in New York, and the weather is beautiful here, but I hear you got some thunderstorms and rain happening there in the Midwest.
Yeah, do we have some thunder beings on their way? Well, it has clouded up quite a bit. But I won't complain. We always need rain.
Yeah, we need Wendy on the show because she loves doing the weather. It sounds like you don't know what the weather is, Haley.
Well, it was sunny all day. I mean, blue sky, hot as heck, which I'm not a huge fan of the heat. So it's a little too humid for me. I'm a baby.
No, I'm with you. You have an old soul, and us old people don't like the heat. Oh,
yeah, I'll stay in my AC, luckily.
Hey, tomorrow I'll be doing a secret assignment in the New York City in the Bronx, and we're going to have Arvina Martin guest host, and I know you're excited, Haley, to get a break from me.
Oh, no. We love you, Dega. We can't do the show without the host, but Arvina Martin is a really great filler, and yeah, I'm excited. I love our all Ho-Chunk show, especially when it's an all-girl show. I think that's always really fun. So excited to get her back on. And another, I believe, our guest right now that we have on, has she guest hosted before too?
I don't know. I don't think so, but we should trick her into it sometime.
Well,
let's get her on.
Hey, Ruth Buffalo.
Hey, Dosha. Good to see you both.
Hey, how's it going? Good to see you. It's great that you're becoming a semi-regular here on Tuesday nights and checking in on the great work that you're doing. And, of course, I want to introduce you to everybody because they know you as one of our representatives of the Dakotas there. But you're now president and CEO of Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, and we're always great to hear updates and what's happening in that realm.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we had another amazing, beautiful day here at Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. We had a cool event downstairs, a kinship care support group. And so it sounded like it was amazing. There was wild rice hot dish that was served and a lot of sharing and coming together. And it's the first of many support group convenings for our relatives who provide kinship care for their relatives.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about what kinship care is to our listeners out there?
Sure. It's basically, in short, it's when our relatives step up and step forward and lean in to take care of their relatives so that it prevents their relatives from going into different systems. Our family services department here at MIWRC has two ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Care Act, kinship workers who do a lot of outreach and support for our relatives who are taking care of their relatives. And it's to ultimately keep families together, strengthen that family unit while being rooted in our values as tribal peoples.
Yeah, that is awesome, and I believe that it's so important to talk about that too. It's with ICWA and things that we need. Minnesota, unbelievably, has one of the highest, if not the highest, percentage of Native kids in foster care.
Yes, I remember that statistic loud and clear. And yes, and I know, you know, within this past year, 2 years, you know, there's been a lot of movement at the state legislative levels to codify, you know, ICWA and to make sure that there are protections in place for our relatives. But yes, it's crazy, right? Because I think when we look back at the timeline of federal Indian law and policy, was it 1977 the American Indian Religious Freedom Act was enacted? But then wasn't there an overlap too? I know with VAWA or the prosecution of non-natives, those rights were stripped, I think, with a year later. And then also ICWA, something with ICWA also happened around that same time. So it was kind of like a high and a low, you know. So
yeah,
but yes, it's there's definitely a lot of work that needs to be done, but it's beautiful to see our relatives stepping up and stepping forward to ensure that our relatives stay together and provide that wraparound love that is needed and that is and always has been existing within our communities. Because I think back to this really horrible letter to the editor that was written when I was in office in North Dakota regarding ICWA, and it was just terrible how politicized our Native children are, you know, as a result. But there was a terrible letter to the editor that was written that said, you know, Native children, you know, that they're best to find love in a non-Native family because a Native family wasn't capable of giving that love and nurture. And it was like, what? And so I remember at that time, NARF and other national, you know, NICWA, they all were able to write a response to that letter to the editor, you know. So it's just, that comes to mind.
Yeah, well, and we appreciate that. That's crazy that that people think that way, and to bring that up, I appreciate that. It's sometime we're in an insulated world, and I know there was a blood memory. The star blood memory was Sandy Whitehawk, and I asked her years ago on this show, what can we do for parents? You know, how can we support parents? And she said something really interesting that it's always stuck with me, that give them the money that you would give somebody for foster caring. Give the family the money so they can keep the, you know, the children within their family. And I know with the economy the way it is for a lot of us, it's hard for single mothers, and we all have to step in. All the family members have to step in and help. Even married couples, it's just really, really expensive now, Ruth.
Yes, completely. We are in challenging times, and that was quite honestly one of the most common remarks that were always shared to me, even when I was in office, from 2018 to 2022 in North Dakota, representing South Fargo, District 27. But that was one of the most consistent comments that I would receive from people across the state, was that relatives want to step forward and care for their loved ones, but the monetary, you know, not having the means to do so, you know, was always a barrier. And so I know there's work to address that, to alleviate that barrier. You know, now we have, you know, kinship is being uplifted and amplified. So that's a beautiful thing.
It really is. And I'm so happy you're on here giving us updates, because what the work you guys do is so important and people need to know about it. So, hey, we're here with Ruth Buffalo, and we are the president and CEO of Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. And we'll be right back after this short break.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by, stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence, and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Attention transit customers. On Saturday, June 15th, Metro Transit will make changes to transit service within your community. As we do each quarter, we review our resources and ridership trends. These service changes continue our ongoing work to best serve customers throughout our system with our given resources. A summary of the upcoming service changes and a preview of the updated schedules are available now at metrotransit.org. Again, that's at metrotransit.org.
Hi, it's Robert Pilot from Native Roots Radio. If you need new windows for your home or business, I highly recommend 952 Windows. They offer windows and doors with the longest warranties and Energy Star's #1 most efficient ratings. I can personally vouch for them, having known the owner for decades. They did a fantastic job on our second floor addition 20 years ago, installing windows, roofing, siding, and even adding a master bedroom and bathroom. In my opinion, they're one of the most best-kept secrets in remodeling. As Onyx Bath and Rosebud Cabinet Dealers, 952 Windows guarantees top quality products. Until now, 952 Windows thrived on referrals and the loyalty of satisfied window light customers. They continue to support these customers by providing warranty parts for the 80,000 windows sold since 1994. For unbeatable deals and trusted service on windows, doors, roofing, siding, kitchens, bathrooms, and more, call 952 Windows or visit 952windows.com.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic, or NAC, on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Can't hear you, Robert.
I was just talking to the dog here, and I happened to say we're here with Ruth Buffalo. Thanks, Haley. Ruth Buffalo, and she is the president and CEO of the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. And we're really always excited to have you on and talk about the great work you're doing and a lot of stopgapping here for our families and our people in need, and there's also great things going on there too. Let's talk about what's happening at the Resource Center.
Yeah, we have, let's see, we did have a SUD, substance use disorder informational session and training for tomorrow, but it sounds like it's going to be rescheduled. And so be on the lookout for an update on that rescheduling of the SUD training. And we also have, I believe, medicine bag making on June 20th during the day or late afternoon. And then we're going to jump right into a taco fundraiser and I believe movie night on June 20th at the community room here at Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, 2300 15th Avenue South here in the Phillips neighborhood. And so we're, you know, really trying to stabilize all of our existing programs. We have an amazing traditional birthing program with doulas. We have the drop-in center that is serves our, you know, unhoused relatives, you know, on the daily. And so just trying to find ways to stabilize our funding and our programs so that we can continue to keep our doors open, because we are, you know, in a transformation in our organization, and it's going to take some time to stabilize our funding. So with that, you know, if people wish to donate, that would be amazing. miwrc.org/donate. And so, yes, we are, you know, working diligently to stabilize our funding, keep our doors open for seven generations and beyond, because the work that our employees, our staff do here, like you mentioned, is so critically important to the community. The drop-in center, you know, they actually connect a lot of our unhoused relatives to services. And they have a lot of success stories of connecting individuals to housing, you know, getting housing stabilization there. We also have a housing navigator on board here, you know, a Section 8 housing coordinator who does a lot of work. In a lot of our programs, there's overlap, you know, with New Jamal, She Heals, sexual assault, domestic violence, human trafficking. So we definitely have a wraparound approach, you know, wraparound services in-house where there's overlap from one department to the next. And then we have a learning center, and that program provides like the training to the public. Like we just finished a Native American curriculum training that is more tailored to non-natives, non-tribal people who do work and serve the Native tribal population. And so that was a 3-day training that was held late last week, and got to visit briefly with a couple of the trainers, and they're, you know, just amazing people who love to come back and provide that training here every year, and it's super beneficial to the community.
Yeah, that sounds good. We get a lot of questions, and I really believe that's why Native Roots Radio has been so successful over the last 7 years, is that we have people like you speaking to our allies across Turtle Island here about things that are indigenous and how we feel and things like that. So it's so important. I got one quick question. What movie are you going to be showing?
That is to be determined. I know we've been throwing around. It's going to be a surprise, I believe. But I know we've been throwing around, you know, different, you know, just brainstorming. There's so many good favorites out there. But yeah, I believe that will be to be determined.
Oh, the curiosity approach. I like that.
Yeah.
Haley, you have any questions? I know you've been down there and you see the great work that they're doing.
I know. I was really excited to hear about the curriculum training, because just over my experience working with behavioral health professionals and especially like some of our white allies, they always seem to have questions, and I don't always feel like I have the right answers. So I feel like the curriculum training at Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center is just a really great resource. And I guess, is this just a one a year type of thing? Or are you guys going to hold more trainings throughout the year?
That's a really good question. Right now, I believe it is annually, but I think, you know, if there's a demand, of course, we'll for sure meet that demand. And I think one exciting thing that we're a part of, too, here at MIWRC is that we are also a part of the Indigenous, you know, Earth Justice Collaborative. We just had a meeting today with the different partners, and it's exciting as we ramp up efforts to, you know, help with the bringing something to fruition that has been in the works for the past 2 years of the first Indigenous birthing center to be housed here in South Minneapolis is pretty amazing. So it's pretty cool to hear, you know, the different key partners at the table, like Dr. Anthony Stately, his wife, Ramona, are, you know, leading those efforts. So it's pretty cool to see that this is now coming to fruition. And, you know, after the bill was, you know, it was an appropriations bill that was passed in the Minnesota state legislature. So it's pretty exciting and cutting edge, and it's awesome to be a part of it.
Well, and I don't know if people realize we got over 28 stations across the country that are listening to you right now. I don't know if they realize how great of a place you are, where we have all these other groups you talked about, Dr. Stately, all these other Native groups down the Franklin corridor to work with. And it's a great place to be, a big population of urban Indians here in Minneapolis.
For sure. I mean, it's it is a breath of fresh air. I mean, it's it is amazing to see the good work, the good heart work that is here and that continues to be. So yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So we got a couple more minutes. What I always have to honor my wife, because she always says with our guests, ask them what they want to talk about. So we got a couple minutes here. That's spitball what you'd like to talk about or promote or whatever's going on. How's your new house? I mean, it's you know, now that you've moved here in Minnesota, and how long does it take to be a true Minnesotan? A few years? I know you've been here before.
Yes. So yeah, the boy twin is here with me this week. So it's been fun. And we both, you know, we stayed in the new place last night on some cots, but we're hoping to check out one of our favorite spots here. It's pretty beautiful in this amazing area. We went there yesterday evening and then found a new little restaurant to check out, and he approves of it, the boy twins. Uh-huh. So he wants to return there tonight after we go back to the same spot to go, you know, enjoy being out in nature and getting some walking in. But yeah, just looking forward to you know, having more of my family members here with me, and I think that's going to be super nice, and looking forward to that.
Well, you talk about your secret place, Minnesota, and I mean the Twin Cities have such nice urban, urban lakes, urban falls, urban rivers. It's beautiful here.
It is. It really is. You know, I enjoy the drive to work. I mean, there's a couple different ways to get here, but there's one in particular that I like the scenery. It's a lot of green, you know. So yeah, it's beautiful here. It is for sure very beautiful.
Well, I just want to say, and Haley will amplify this, that we are so happy to be with you on Tuesdays, but also that you're here in the Minnesota and the Twin Cities helping our big community out. And I just can't say enough, right, Haley?
Oh, yeah. Well, it takes, you know, a really great big leader to help a community like this, and especially a woman leader. So, you know, just really happy to have you here. And thanks for being our Tuesday guest.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I think just the common theme for me is just healing. It just seems to be a lot of healing taking place and mutually. So it's beautiful to be a part of.
Yeah, well, this is Ruth Buffalo, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, CEO and president. A big peeny giggy thank you so much for coming on, and I'm going to have to, like, follow you.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. Baseball legend Willie Mays has died at the age of 93, according to MLB and the San Francisco Giants. Mays, nicknamed the Say Hey Kid, was a Giant center fielder with his signature basket catch. CBS's Jim Shenevy looks back.
When Bobby Thompson hit the shot heard round the world in 1951, the on-deck hitter was National League Rookie of the Year Willie Mays. In his induction speech at the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1979, Mays remembered he was in a dreadful slump earlier that year until he had a talk with his manager.
Leo said to me, "Son, as long as I'm manager, you are my center fielder. You do not have to hit, just go out and catch the ball." And from those words from Leo DeRocher, I think, gave me a little courage.
The Say Hey Kid won two MVP awards and slammed 660 homers on his way to Cooperstown.
Mays died peacefully this afternoon, surrounded by loved ones. CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services wants people attending fairs and petting zoos to be careful interacting with animals this summer. A new strain of bird flu is affecting dairy cattle in other states, but state epidemiologist Thomas Haupt says the risk for humans is very low.
We're going to be working with the local public health departments and providers to be sure that we're testing people who need to be tested. But we also want to assure the public that it's not a panic situation as yet.
DHS recommends fairgoers take simple precautions, like washing their hands and avoiding animals that look sick. The Juneteenth flag was raised at the state capitol building on Tuesday. Governor Evers has ordered the flag be flown until sunset on Wednesday. Juneteenth celebrates the emancipation of enslaved Black and African people in the United States, and it has been a federal holiday since 2021. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Woody Harrelson was in a motorcycle accident recently while driving to Conan O'Brien's podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, where he was to appear with Ted Danson. O'Brien addressed the bandage on Harrelson's hand. During the broadcast, Harrelson told O'Brien about his accident and said it's a good thing he wore a helmet because he flew over his handlebars and hit his head when he crashed into a Tesla. Instead of going to an actual doctor, Woody drove to the set where pretend Dr. Becker bandaged him up. Throughout the interview, listeners learned that hazing was alive and well on the set of Cheers. Danson says most of the actors were in their 30s and young Buck Harrelson was 24 when he joined the cast. In an effort to show Harrelson the pecking order, Danson said he and his castmates tried to kick Harrelson's butt. First with physical activity, but Harrelson beat them all in basketball, leg wrestling, and arm wrestling. When they switched to more cerebral methods, Harrelson beat them at chess, too. Who would have thought a humble guy from Indiana could outsmart Hollywood actors? For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabo, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price for the overnight. Mostly clear skies, gusty south winds up around 25 miles per hour. Our sunrise temperatures in the lower 70s. For your Wednesday, showers and storms developing in the afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, south winds, highs in the middle 80s. It's 84 at our studios.
100 days, 144,000 minutes. The countdown to the November presidential election is on, and Maggie Dawn is counting too as she continues her special segment, Biden's Top 100.
Having heard from each and every one of you, I should start talking about what President Biden is proposing us for his second term.
Biden's Top 100 continues. You're invited to be part of it too. Call or text the Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays starting at 2, across the Civic Media Radio Network and the app.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets that, and our job is to help you navigate the sales process and provide smooth sailing. You have questions? We have answers. You have worries? We have solutions. Let us open the door to your future home. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 608-721-8002, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
Pete Schwabach.
On the next Night Lights, singing duo 7,000 Apart joins me in studio as they prepare for their big appearance at Summerfest, and comedian Mike Siegel joins to discuss 80s TV shows.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is in partnership with the City of Minneapolis and Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Thank you. Welcome back to Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And today we are talking with Victoria Belko, who is a Neighborhood Support Specialist with the Neighborhood and Community Relations Department, and Luke Gannon, who is the Director of Program Engagement at East Phillips Improvement Coalition. And go right back into our conversation. Victoria, would you please let us know more about why you got involved in your neighborhood organization and what reasons we can help encourage other folks to become involved in their organizations?
One reason why I got involved is to make a difference. You know, being involved in neighborhood organizations, you get to meet new people who have passion about the stuff that you're passionate about. You get to be able to connect with your neighbors. You get to know who your neighbors are. And you get to be able to utilize skill sets that you have to share and volunteer out to others, and then learn from other people. And so I got involved because I just wanted to be more part of my neighborhood and make a change and make a difference in the neighborhood that I actually reside in. And there's a variety of ways to do that, by joining committees, being on boards, volunteering for an event. You know, you can do that instead of like doing a whole committee and being committed to this committee work. You could be like, hey, I don't want to do committee work, but this event that's a music in the park happening, I want to volunteer on that. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a part of that. And so I can come and set up chairs, and I can come and, you know, or sit out and do flyers, to hand out flyers to folks about information about what neighborhood is doing or what resources we're providing. There's a variety of ways to get involved, and I just think it's a way to connect and a way to feel as if you are connected to your neighbors and feel more useful in your neighborhood and be connected.
Do you have a favorite thing that you did when you were at Victory that you worked on that you would like to share?
I think the thing that I liked the most was a community food garden that we put together. Beforehand, we had an environmental committee who worked on like plants and different environmental type of stuff. But the food garden was something that was a way to bring other folks out of the neighborhood into the neighborhood organization, into a community space, and be able to grow food and learn from each other and educate each other. And we had families and youth and a lot of different things happening around growing food and sustainability. And so the food garden was something that means a lot to me, and it continues to thrive right now as we speak.
So how did their food garden work? Did they have to pay to be involved? Was it free for them? Did they have to plant their own food? Was there education on how to plant a garden?
Well, we set it up with that we paid, the city of Minneapolis had a plot of land, and so they were reapplied to be able to utilize the garden on that plot of land. And what you do is those folks who are going to utilize the community garden, part of the agreement is that it's primarily for folks who either don't have food, a place to grow food on, so people who live in apartment buildings and other stuff like that, or rental places where, like Luke had said earlier, that they're not able to plant because the property owners let them mm-hmm. plant or things like that, or you just don't have enough space to plant. But those are the folks that get the initial priority over the community garden. And so it was free for folks because we were able to get the money from the neighborhood organization to fund the garden. And then there's just some stating places. A lot of volunteers got kickbacks from their neighborhood, from their organization they work from, for volunteer hours. Then some donations came in to be able to continue funding that neighborhood community garden. And so they worked with various different partnerships on getting plants for folks to be able to plant and seeds and that kind of stuff. And then folks worked together on actually building out the plots, and they raised garden beds, and folks donated time and energy and funds to be able to get the wood out there. We had the folks with the saws and all that kind of stuff and filling everything up and then planting and learning from each other. And we had master gardeners teaching folks how to plant food and how to grow food. And then folks who were part of that garden committee were, you know, volunteer weekly out there to maintain it and grow with each other and teach and learn and things like that. That's how that garden works.
Yeah, that sounds so inclusive. I mean, you touched just a little bit on it, but the inclusivity and the accessibility, I didn't know that there were raised gardens available for folks who might have mobility issues. Mm-hmm. That is really neat to hear. There was another thing that I was kind of wanting more information about, and that's the Partnership Engagement Fund, what that is and how that works and how community members can participate in that fund.
Oh, yeah. The Partnership Engagement Fund is a new source of funding for community-based organizations. So it's a separate funding from neighborhood organizations, and it's to uplift diverse voices to make sure that they're being heard and be able to do really fun, really cool and different projects. And meet the needs of residents that may have not been met through other organizations or through neighborhood work, as well as the Partnership Engagement Fund is. And what they do is you don't have to be your own nonprofit. You can be individual. You could have a project you're working on with a group of people. And then you partner with a neighborhood organization who would be your nonprofit person and your fiscal agent. And therefore, you are able to provide services or a program that is approved. You have to go through the application process to be able to get the funding. But people do really cool different projects that normally are not done through neighborhood organizations. So it really lets uplift the voices of individuals and smaller groups of folks who really want to do impactful work and they need funding to be able to start that up or expand their programming to do so. And that's what that fund is about.
What kind of programming is eligible and how much money could you potentially get for your project?
It depends on the funding sources. Each year, the funding structure is a little bit different. But I think it's up to $20,000 based on you have to go through application process. And there's community reviewers review your application to see if you're able to meet the criteria to be able to apply. But you have to be, you know, partner with the neighborhood organization. But a variety of projects have been funded. I mean, we have a lot of art projects. Something that happened over there in Phillips neighborhood actually is the Semia Center for Healing Arts actually did a project over there. And they're off of Bloomington is where they did their project where they were putting artwork and up doing youth engagement and youth empowerment and helping youth have a voice and making sure that they are heard, and they do that through murals and different artworks and beautifying the neighborhood. And so that's happening over there on Bloomington Avenue. So if you go down Bloomington, you'll see murals around and little things on the light posts. Those are all done through the art project there. And they kind of uplift the youth who are in the neighborhood, have their voices heard. Other projects that has happened would be right there in Little Earth. There was that, I think Luke talked a little bit about the urban farming that's happening in Little Earth. Yep. And so that project there, which is a great project where you actually have an orchard out there and folks are growing great food and you have healing spaces and sweat lodges and they are growing tons of different food. They do native medicines like sage and lemongrass and that kind of stuff. There's definitely sweetgrass. There's definitely different projects that are happening that are all like unique to the neighborhood organizations, each of the neighborhoods that are being funded out there. And they really are impactful and they're creative. And the Partnership Engagement Fund kind of allows for a different creativity than folks have seen in a more traditional neighborhood organization programs.
You did mention the applications are reviewed by community reviewers.
Correct.
Can you tell me what that is? And if somebody wanted to be a part of that process, is there an application for that? How do they get connected to participate in that?
So yeah, once a year, once the applications come in, so for next year, the 2025 will start opening for January, will be the applications for folks who are interested in applying for partnership engagement funds. And then when we get those applications in, we do a call out for neighborhoods and community. So it could be residents, neighborhood organizations, community members. We want as much people who are in community, youth, people of color, you know, young folks, elders, you know, to come in. And you can, we put out a link through the website and you can sign up on the Gov Delivery to be of a reviewer and have an interest in being a reviewer. And then you come into the office and meet with other folks, and we provide you lunch, and we hang out all afternoon, and you read the different proposals and grade the criteria, and therefore review to make sure that it is equitable and the projects are meet within the criteria, and that community gets to review and say, yes, this project sounds great, or this one does not meet the needs or doesn't meet the criteria, but it's community who is determining those applications and programs, projects to be funded. So it's community who wants these projects out there.
I really love that aspect, knowing that it's your community, it's your neighbors that are helping to decide where the funds are going.
Yes.
It's not left up to government bureaucrats like us that are going to say, this is worthy, this isn't worthy, but it's your neighborhood, it's your community. So you have the buy-in happening when you start those projects. Yeah. I love that aspect, community reviewers. So I'm going to move on to Luke. So do you want to let us know why people should consider getting into their neighborhood organization, what kind of things that people can get involved in from your perspective?
Yes, absolutely. Gosh, I just think, like, I love going outside and walking down. One of my favorite things to do in the summer, maybe not in the winter in Minneapolis, is walking down the streets and seeing everyone on their porches outside and saying hello, having a short, you know, 5-minute conversation with people, right? To get that kind of connection, to get to know your neighbors. And I just feel like the reason to get involved in your neighborhood is everyone wants, like, a sense of self-determination. They want a sense of knowing what's going to happen in their neighborhood and having a say in what's going to happen. And so if you have, you know, outside developers coming in who haven't even talked to the community about their development project and do something, or a business, and then you, it's bad on both ends, because you have a community that doesn't want something, and you also have, say, a new business that no one goes to. So just like having, for people who might be interested in getting involved, or my, I guess, pitch to people would be, like, if you want to say in what's going to happen in your neighborhood, like, you have that power, you have that. And, like, we want to hear your voice. And I just think it's so important to bring people's voices up. And so to do that, you can, we just launched a new website, so you can see it at phillipsunited.org and sign up for our newsletter.
Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio.
Thank you.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Dive into a world where tradition meets innovation, satire meets symbolism, and Native American art takes center stage. All My Relations Arts and the Native American Community Development Institute proudly unveil Alter Native by Frank Buffalo Hyde. Alter Native is an electrifying exhibition that uses satire to push boundaries and demand a closer look at the vibrant complexities of Native identity in today's world. So embrace the unexpected and challenge norms with Alter Native by Frank Buffalo Hyde, showing now at All My Relations Arts in Minneapolis. Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
Howl!
Why must the world be so cold? They've gone against what was told. Thinking rape is cool? Think about it. They think it's not wrong. Violence against women, the rape, the abuse, the emotional, physical. They all hold the hate. Think about it. Is it right or wrong? What attracts you? I'm not saying no names, but you laugh. Talk about it like nothing is wrong. Think about it. They all hold the hate. Gotta stop the violence. Stop the hate. Think about it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This episode is in partnership with the City of Minneapolis and Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. Here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Good evening. Welcome back. Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. We are having our conversation with Victoria Belko, who is a Neighborhood Support Specialist with the Neighborhood Community Relations Department, and with Luke Gannon, who is the Director of Program and Engagement with the East Phillips Improvement Coalition. You go right back into our conversation. Luke, has EPIC done any work with the Native community in South Minneapolis, seeing that it is home to the highest population of American Indians in the city of Minneapolis?
Yes, and that's a great question. We have. So in the past, I know Victoria mentioned or talked about the partnership engagement funds. And another one of those that we did is with the Native Youth Arts Collective. And that the idea behind that one was to give youth at Little Earth who were interested in art, who wanted to be artists, typically young kids, basically like art packages where they would be able to, if they couldn't afford it, they could be able to just make art at home. And that ran, I think, in 2021, and it was a super successful project. More recently, it ended maybe 3 months ago now, we did a youth redesign workshop or series of workshops, the redesign of East Phillips in Cedar Park, because the park board right now is planning on redesigning them. So they're doing a community engagement process, and we partnered with them on that. And we did that with youth in the neighborhood, but specifically with Little Earth teenagers. It was all teenagers who engaged in this 3-workshop series and basically gave their ideas and their visions for how they wanted the 2 parks to look like, what they wanted to be there. And that was just an amazing, successful project. We ended up with a big report, a big mural of what they wanted in the parks that we presented to the park board, and that they presented to the park board, really, which was great. And what else? At the Epic Community Garden, we partner with Dream of Wild Health, who has a couple of plots there, and they have done workshops there in the past. And we also work very closely with the East Phillips Neighborhood Institute, who have 2 board members who are Little Earth residents and who just have a vision for urban farming that's very rooted in indigenous practices and leadership.
Mm-hmm. So just quick, do you have any Native board members on EPIC?
We do. We have 1 Native board member on EPIC.
Nice. Okay, yeah. So there is always room for people to apply and become a board member.
Yes.
And with that, Victoria, would you be able to tell us more about what a board member does with a neighborhood organization?
Yeah, board members play an important role in neighborhood organizations. They are the governing body over the neighborhood organization because they're a 501(c). So by law, you have to have a board of directors. And they really direct the high-level work of the neighborhood organization. And some organizations have staff and have executive directors who then direct the work. Some have contractors who contract a specific area of work to do for the organization, but the board of directors, they're the ones who are the leaders of the organization and really make sure that the organization is adhering to its mission, its goals, and do the high level, making sure that the program and services are meeting the needs of the neighborhood and the organization. So it's a really important role to be part of the board. It's a very impactful place to be. And people are always looking for new board members. And board of directors for these neighborhood organizations are actually made up of community members. So you have to either live in the neighborhood or own a business in the neighborhood, work in the neighborhood, but it is the residents of the neighborhood who are the leaders of the organization driving the work.
That's awesome. Can you tell us how, if somebody wanted to run for a seat, how would they do that?
What you would do is you would contact the neighborhood organization that you want to be on the board on and ask when their board elections are. And each neighborhood organization has an annual election for board election, so it's annually. And then see what their neighborhood organization has for open seats, and then ask to run for the board. And each neighborhood organization has their own ways, bylaws of how they run their annual meetings and how you get on the board. But so it's individual through each organization, but it is made up of neighborhood members. So contact the organization. Hey, I want to run for the board. Mm-hmm. When's your annual meeting? When are seats open? And then do a board election where a lot is, it's the neighborhood votes you in. So you kind of tell who you are, why you want to run for the neighborhood organization, why you'd be good for this role. And then the neighborhood residents vote for the board members to be placed on the board.
So these, I think earlier in the conversation, it was mentioned that each neighborhood organization is an actual 501c nonprofit organization, and they definitely have a charter. So it is really a pretty formal process to be voted in, and mm-hmm. it has term limits. It has, what do you call it? Like, if you voted in, you're seated for a year, 2 years.
Each organization is different to how they seat their stuff, but board members cannot be on the board longer than 6 years consecutively, is how the city funding for the neighborhood organizations. But outside of that, the neighborhood could do it, you know, 1 year, or is it 2 years? It depends on how they want to run it, but you can't be on there longer than 6 years, which allows for more folks to be able to be on boards, more folks to be able to be a participant, and not stagnate the board work.
Is it typically a highly competitive process, or is it kind of like, are you operating as on a full board, or are there vacancies?
There are some, you know, organizations who have bigger boards than others. Each neighborhood organization is different. Some have large boards and they have a lot of folks trying to run, and some folks have smaller boards and open seats, and whoever runs gets on and gets placed because that's how it showed up. So it's a kind of who shows up and what the openings are, but it's not too competitive, you know. But if you want community members to be on the boards to lead the work.
So do all organizations have the same number of board members? Do they get the same amount of funding?
No, each neighborhood organization, because they are their own 501c, they have their own bylaws, their own rules, and their own ways of how they structure their nonprofit organization. So based on that is how the board members are. So some might have a board of 15, while some have 7. And that all depends on that neighborhood structure of how they chose to individually as a nonprofit put together their board.
Can you tell us how people can connect with their neighborhood organization?
Yeah. One of the best ways is to go on the city webpage. We have a city webpage where we have I can put the link on radio. Go to the city webpage where we have a neighborhood page where it pops up all of the neighborhoods in the city of Minneapolis, and you just click on the link that has your neighborhood, and then that props up their information, their contact information, their email, their website, that kind of stuff, to be able to get involved in your neighborhood.
Okay, so it's easy to find. You can go to the city website, MinneapolisMN.gov, and you can search for neighborhood organization.
Yeah, we go to our neighborhood page, through the NCR page,
okay,
and then look for it under neighborhoods, and they will pop up the map, and you can click on the organizations.
A map. So if you don't know what your neighborhood organization name is, you'll be able to find it on the website as well.
Yeah, so there's a map on the left side of the web page, and then there's all the list of the organizations on the right to be able to match you up.
That is cool. That makes it easy.
Yeah.
Luke, so how can people get involved specifically with EPIC?
Yes. So we have our office located on Bloomington Avenue. It's right in East Phillips, kind of on the border between East and Midtown Phillips. And we're here. You can walk into the office and hang out with us if you want during the week and ask us questions and see how you can get involved. You also can call us. If you look up the East Phillips Improvement Coalition, you'll find a number, and you can give us a ring or email us. We'll respond to you as quickly as we can. Or you can just go to our website and sign up for our newsletter if you just want news updates.
And did you say that office was staffed 5 days a week?
It is 4 days a week.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. I want to thank you guys for joining me this afternoon. We had a great conversation.
You're listening to The Shaw at WAUK, Waukesha's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we come to you live from Baraboo, Wisconsin for Juneteenth.
Our friend and colleague Earl Ingram joins us. You don't want to miss it. See you then.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Sometimes our healthcare system can feel impersonal. Who can help my healthcare team understand what is important to me? Who can connect me with community services and health resources?
Community health representatives can. Community health representatives, or CHRs, live and work in our community, so they understand your unique health needs and can break down the barriers that get between you and the quality care you deserve. Want to learn more? See all the good community health representatives do at dhs.wisconsin.gov/CHR.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.